This is Brett from the Prosecutor's Podcast. Thank you for joining Jeff, the man you know better as the shepherd to his indie podcasting flock, the Podcast Father, on this journey, sharing great things content creators are doing. He is the Indie Podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artist? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster. With your host, the Podcast Father.
Welcome back to Indie Podcaster. This, of course, is Jeff Townsend, your Indie Podcast Father. I did want to take a second to thank all of you that have been checking on me during my absence, sending me emails, text messages, Twitter messages, whatever it may be, concerned. I appreciate your thoughts and prayers and everything. I really do. I am back and doing better. All I can say is make sure you take care of yourself. Mental health is very important. I don't want to get caught up on that too long, though, because I have an awesome episode ahead today. This is a good one. I talked to James Cridlin, creator of Pod News, which is the go-to source for all podcasting news and information. James is a genius. He's a good guy. Pleasure getting to know him. And I'm excited to share this conversation with you because we get into the creation of Pod News and some things he did before that. And then we talk about his feelings on indie podcasts when it comes to awards. It was in regards to the Webby Awards that came out a few months ago. So it's a cool conversation. Then we talk about indie podcasters in general. So it's a really great conversation that I'm super excited to share with you. I had a great time doing it. I have a hell of a lot of respect for James Cridlin. So this is a cool one that I'm excited to bring you. And if you haven't already, I obviously encourage you to make sure that you subscribe to Pod Newsletter or listen to the podcast itself. There's actually a podcast every day, you know, Monday through Friday. So just like the newsletter, it's incredible. It's great stuff. I encourage you to check it out. I don't want to waste too much more time. We're going to go ahead and jump into it. But before we do that, I do need to thank a supporter of this podcast. Let's just take a quick second here to acknowledge a supporter of this podcast, Podden.io. Podden.io is a great service for podcast transcription, and I'm telling you, I can personally vouch for them. They're the most simple and accurate one I've ever used. I absolutely love it, and I do think it's important that all you podcasters listening give it a try and actually have transcription for your podcast. If you use the code IndiePodcaster, you get 50% off your first month. It's worth checking out, I guarantee it. Go to Podden.io. Let's go ahead and check out this stupendous conversation. James, I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today. It's been a long time coming, man. I feel like I said before we started recording, I've referred hundreds of new indie podcasters to your newsletter. So it's awesome to finally meet the genius behind it all.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for asking. It's very good to visit the Podcast Father.
You know, that's caught me a lot of crap from a few industry
old guards. I'm sure it has.
I've got a few DMs on the Twitter about that. Put it that way. I don't think they quite understood like where it was coming from, though. It's not like saying I'm Adam Curry, right? It's saying I'm a nurturing figure to indie podcasters, right? It's not,
yeah.
But it's easy to just send a message, I guess, and not look into somebody's work beforehand. But hey, you're a funny guy, James. You really are. So, man, I really do appreciate you taking the time to do this. I'll give you a second to tell us about yourself. There might be a few people out there that haven't heard of you and what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. Well, so my name's James Cridlin. I'm a Brit, as you can tell from my accent, but I'm actually here in Australia. And I've been writing Pod News for the last 5 years. Pod News is a daily newsletter and a podcast all about podcasting and what's going on and all of that. And you can get it for free at podnews.net.
Beautiful. It's like you've said that or practiced that a few times.
It's very clearly not like I've said that or practiced that a few times. I think I'm still waking up. I think that's my issue this morning.
Being in Australia is just completely opposite of most other places in the world that you'd be interacting with. But I imagine it kind of works out for a newsletter. So
yeah, it works out brilliantly for a newsletter. So one of the things when I was starting to do Pod News 5 years ago, a lot of what I was planning on doing was just based on workflow. So when is the best time to send out Pod News? Not the best time for the audience, but when is the best time for me so that I can actually produce a good quality product that comes out every single day? And it just so happens that 9 o'clock in the evening is when Pod News goes out for me, which is 6 in the morning New York time, which is a great time actually, because it does mean that I've got all of the day while you lot are asleep so that I can actually focus on you know, putting something out, which is really helpful. Yeah, so the time zone is really useful for that and really bad for other things like, you know, interviews and talking to people on the phone.
Yeah, or even catching up with you at all on Twitter. It's like you got a few hour window there to, if we want to talk about some podcasting scam going on. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's a bit of a frustration, but certainly it's very useful, you know, in terms of that. And certainly it's very good, you know, some of my clients in Europe, for example, I will turn around to them because I'm also a radio consultant. I will turn around to them and I'll say, I'll get that done overnight for you. And they think I'm amazing because I work overnight. But of course, it's just a normal day for me. So that works really well.
You're a radio guy, and I've told this story a million times on this podcast, but I know you haven't heard this story. So I was a radio guy once too, James. I'm going to tell you the story of how my radio career ended. So after college, I got on to where, kind of worked my way where I was actually like a morning voice thing, which is a big deal in a pretty good sized city. Like, you're doing the radio show at 8 a.m., right? It's a big deal. So a couple months into it, I was interviewing a city official and I was super excited about it. You know, it's during rush hour. Everybody's listening.
Yeah.
And during this interview, I meant to make the comment, you've had a successful career, but for some reason it slipped and I said, you've had a sexful career.
Uh-oh.
I don't know why. It's not like, that's not even a word, first of all. Let's start out with that. But I have no clue. I guess it's kind of close on the phrasing, but the next day I was in market. I got kind of moved over to marketing, man. So yeah, that's my story of my radio experience. But wow. I know you're a decorated man in radio, so I'll let you tell yours.
Wowee. Indeed, yes. And I've given you an answer, but yes, I mean, I was once very much told off for swearing a bit on the radio in front of a live microphone. That was a big mistake. But no, I really enjoyed doing it, actually. It was really good fun to be behind a mic for, I think, in total, 10 years in a couple of different markets. And it's a really enjoyable job in some ways, and it's also a really boring job in other ways. And I think one of the things that I found a bit frustrating was, you know, trying to get excited about the same old songs all over again. And yeah, so not much career progression, particularly if you're not very good, as I was. So... So that doesn't always help either. But no, you know, really, really enjoyable. And I've worked behind the scenes in radio for the last 30 years or so.
So one of the things that to me is awesome about this podcast is getting to hear a story from somebody like you, right? Because sometimes stories can be more beneficial on a learning experience than just saying, hey, if you want to be successful, do step A, B, C. Sometimes a good story can be really captivating and a good experience. So how did you actually get into podcasting and what you're doing? Like, how did that all play out?
So getting into podcasting originally, I wrote my first RSS feed in March of 2005. So a long, long time ago, prior to even needing anything around iTunes, because there was no such thing as iTunes in podcasting back at that time. But I was working for Richard Branson's radio station, Virgin Radio, in London. And I had spotted that podcasting was a thing, was happening. And I thought, I wonder what we can do with some of our radio shows and whether we can turn them into podcasts. So worked with a friend of mine called Duncan on something that would essentially telescope a full breakfast show into a podcast that you could download. And got that launched in March of 2005. We got the first podvertiser in the UK to regularly advertise on a podcast. It was the UK government. Thank you, UK government. And yeah, so that was fun. And also worked for the BBC during my career as well, and, you know, tangentially working with their podcasting side. The way that I got into Pod News was actually a conversation in a pub in Los Angeles, which, you know, of course. And it was a chat with a friend of mine who was basically saying, where do you get your news about podcasting from? And I was thinking, well, there really isn't anywhere. There's nowhere really that has a daily sort of update on what's going on. And I thought, perhaps I have the skills to do that. And that was about 5 or so years ago. It was something called the Worldwide Radio Summit in LA. And I think I must have been the worldwide bit. I think that's basically how that bit worked. Yeah, so that's basically how the Pod News newsletter started.
That's pretty cool. And it's definitely like there was a need for it, obviously. How challenging was it starting it? Like, how much planning did you go in beforehand? And how did you execute your plans?
So, I mean, you know, I think most of my planning was, firstly, I had to build the tech to do it because I much prefer using my own tech rather than trying to, you know, grab WordPress and see if I can get WordPress to do exactly what I want to do and blah, blah, blah. So I built the website and found a good mailing system that would work. But I was sort of more keen on looking at the workflow, trying to understand, okay, what is going to be, assuming that I'm still a radio consultant, assuming that I'm still doing quite a lot of overseas travel, assuming that that's all going on, how will I be able to fit this new thing of mine into my day? And so working on, you know, what the format of it was, how I would deal with, you know, printing press releases if I couldn't link to them, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it was about a month's worth of going, okay, well, I need this and I need that. Let's just try putting something out and seeing if it works. But I'd already been doing, you know, newsletters for a number of years. So I sort of roughly knew what I was doing there, but it was just, you know, as I say, getting the workflow right, trying to understand the simplest and easiest way to make a product, which hopefully works and works well.
Absolutely, it does. How would you say it's evolved over time, man? Because everything evolves over time, or I guess it could go either way, but...
Yeah, I think one of the difficulties that I've found is trying to do more things with it without it taking a lot of additional work, because that's not what I want. I don't necessarily want to be spending, you know, 9 to 5, or in my case, 9 to 9, writing a newsletter, thank you very much, because, you know, I think that there are other things to be working on too. So one of the things that I don't want to do is to pile on more additional features if I can possibly get away with it. That said, you know, Pod News now is considerably longer, considerably bigger than it used to be 5 years ago. There's a jobs board on there. There's an events section in there as well. There's quite a lot of additional news. I think the big change, though, has been the industry has grown up in the last five mm-hmm. years. The industry has become much more commercial, much more, you know, much more interesting from a point of view of, you know, lots of business deals being done, lots of people announcing things. And so just the amount of email that I get every day and the amount of stories that are vying to get into Pod News has been quite sometimes overwhelming in comparison to, you know, clearly where we were 5 years ago when there wasn't the same amount of interest in the business side, certainly, of the industry. So I think that's been a big change in terms of how, you know, how everything's, you know, happened.
So before we kick things off, we only have to do it the right way. Let's just get the sponsor of this episode going here. Tell us about yourself, Greg. Tell us what you offer, pal.
Yeah, so if you're a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster and you're looking to grow your show, you can submit an episode to Indie Drop-In. We will play the full episode of your show to an embedded base of listeners, listeners looking for your content. Then, if they like you, they'll follow you. And guess what? It's 100% free. I actually pay Tanner and Jeff to get your content. If you can believe that. I don't know how I got roped into being the creator of Indie Drop-In, but I will like to promote your show. How was that, Jeff?
That's good. Tanner, what do you think?
I think you did a better job than I do.
Definitely does a better job than I do. I can hardly even talk.
Yeah. Well, no, I think you do a great job. I've heard your ads so many times that now I just replay them in my head. But for anyone interested in submitting a show, just go to indiedropin.com/creators. Just follow the form and I'll take it from there.
Yeah, I'm trying to I'm picturing back 5 years ago, did you do it 5 days a week right off the bat? Because you are now, that's a full-time thing. But was it still like that in the beginning?
Yeah. So the plan was, I actually took the original idea. There was a very well-known newsletter in the radio industry called Tom Taylor Now. And I actually thought, right, something like that, but shorter and for podcasts. So the idea was always a daily thing. But if there were only three stories, then there were only three stories. That's all that you would get. So, because I knew that, you know, if I can be crass and commercial for a minute, I knew that, you know, daily means that the ad impressions go up very much faster. It means that you can sell sponsorships for more because people are seeing them every single day. You know, it means that classified ads you can book per day, not per week. So there's good benefits. And obviously, you can see this in podcasting as well. It's why so many people are rushing to produce daily shows because, you know, again, the amount of revenue that you can earn from those is rather higher than a weekly one. So I always was planning on doing a daily thing, but the idea was that it shouldn't take too long for you to read. And so you'll still see today a little thing at the top of the newsletter, which basically says this should take about 3 minutes to read, because I want to make sure that it's a quick start to the day if you're in North America, or a quick look if you're in Europe during your lunch break at what's going on in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do love reading that every morning. That's a great way to start it off. Like, I know what to expect. Are you like getting a stopwatch, man, and just reading it?
Oh, no, it's all, as I say, workflow, it's all automatic.
So I think one of the things that make it work now, especially, is you are a go-to person for this in the industry. You specialize in it and all that. You're a credible source now, which takes a hell of a lot of work to do. Like I told you beforehand, I have a hell of a lot of respect for you for that. But it had to take a while to be kind of become that guy that these sources could go to and share information with. A, how would they know you in the first place to begin with? Well, there weren't as many back then. We get that. But it had to be a little bit of time before you're able to earn that respect in general.
Yeah, I think so. And I think one of the things that I spent a long time doing and still spend a long time doing is being active in podcast communities, you know, online, trying to understand more about what made the industry tick back in those days. And, you know, and really just sort of trying to talk with and interface with as many people as possible, you know. And so I think that that's in any form of business. If you're doing a podcast about, you know, underwater knitting, then you should be in the underwater knitting Facebook community. I'm sure there is one, or the subreddit, or whatever it happens to be, because that is where you will be seen as being an expert in this particular field. And obviously, you know, coming at it from, I think, you know, there's a few things that help, I think. One of those things that helps is the previous competition, if you like, was Nick Kwa, who was writing very much from his viewpoint of Boston and Brooklyn. And that was the entire world of podcasting that he was looking at. And I think, you know, I'm very lucky in that I have worked in the Canadian market, the US market, here in Australia, and in many European markets as well. So I'm very aware of the fact that podcasting isn't just from New York. It's a very much wider thing. So I think that was a good start to get me, you know, connected with the right people across the world. So I think that was a tremendous, you know, benefit. And I think the other thing is, pretty early on, I did some quite detailed tech work around why iHeartRadio's numbers were so high, and found out that they weren't really, and that they had a tech bug that had, you know, made those figures rather higher than they should have been. But I'm lucky enough in that I've got a technical background. I understand how podcasting works from a technical point of view as well. And so having that, as well as being a journalist, is really helpful, because it does enable you to understand this world a little bit deeper than, you know, if I was just out of journalism school. So I think that that's been really helpful too.
It's crazy that you just said that, because that's exactly where I was going to go next. You are the complete package as far as knowing a lot of, you might not be the master of everything, but you do have experience in all those things. And that's a really important piece when you're going into anything from a business standpoint, you know, podcasting or anything.
Yeah, I think, you know, not quite jack of all trades, master of none, but certainly understanding, you know, understanding as much as you can about the industry is really useful and really helpful. And I think, you know, doing a podcast, it's interesting, you look at, you know, some people who are writing about podcasting or running a podcast company, and they don't actually do a podcast for themselves. And you're thinking, why are you not, you know, how can you possibly know as much as you could about this industry if you're not actually taking part in, you know, the X, Y, and Z bits of it? So I think, you know, that was always important to me. But I'll also be fair, you know, I'm one of those people that over weekends will sometimes code a new feature just to relax, because, you know, I find that sort of thing fun and enjoyable, you know. And the reason, you know, there are two reasons why I host my own podcast, you know, host it on the web server. One reason is that it's fun and I quite enjoy that sort of thing. But the other thing is that actually that means that I can do an awful lot more with that podcast, because I'm in control of the technology as well. And that's been really helpful for me in, you know, again, chasing up stories, understanding, you know, what's going on in the industry in terms of apps and everything else. So that's been really helpful too.
It is a different kind of industry in some ways when you think about it. because there are journalists, like I used this a few weeks ago in an episode, I was talking with Jeremy Enns. Like if you're an NBA beat writer, right? If you're an NBA writer, I don't know of many of them that have played in the NBA or much, you know, a lot of them haven't played basketball at all. So yeah. But I think podcasting has this kind of a different thing, man. It's like a legitimacy as far as the work that's is put in, particularly on the subject at hand. It feels like a little bit more of a, I don't want to say passion or requirement even, but it just seems to be more of an existing thing where it's important.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I think doing is always important. And, you know, again, back to my radio past, the best program directors are always those program directors who have also sat behind a microphone and done that job for a number of years and understand the stresses and understand what your, you know, staff member is going through. And I think that that's, you know, important. There's a very good radio engineer who I know who, until recently, I don't think you can do it anymore because, you know, unions and everything, but until recently, he was basically making himself do the jobs that some of his staff were doing. So, you know, a big radio engineer of a large radio group, but on a Saturday, you might find him in a radio studio playing out a show because he needs to understand what it's like to actually sit in a radio studio that he's built, understand the bits that worked, the bits that didn't work, you know, and all of that. And I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for people who have actual on-the-job knowledge, as well as, of course, being a great manager and being a great, you know, strategist and everything else. So I think, you know, all of that is important and keeping your feet on the floor, you know, is an important thing for any business that you happen to be in.
Jeff Townsend here, and I'm excited to talk to my good friend Mark Binder. I'm just kidding. His name is Mark Binder. He doesn't like it when I say that. Mark is the creator, I'm going to say owner just because it sounds entrepreneur-y, of Podtrix, the podcast hosting platform. Thanks for joining us, man. I'm excited to hear about this new Podtrix feed import feature that you're going to share with me and us, everybody, the world. Share it with the world, Mark.
World, behold this. The Podtrix feed importer, it's really simple. The Podtrix feed importer is really exciting because it's how you migrate your existing podcast feed to Podtrix hosting. All you got to do is the URL that you would submit to Spotify or Apple or Overcast or whatever, you paste that into the little pop-up that shows up in your show and you say import. The system then goes and will start importing all of your episodes, whether it be 10 episodes or 10,000 episodes. It will pull in every single episode, all of the audio, your descriptions, your categories. Everything is moved into Podtrix seamlessly and is ready for publishing. This feature is about to go live this week or next week and will be available to anybody who wants it out of the gate.
So what we're really here, this is like the big coming out party for all you current podcasters to come on over and check out Podtrix, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Everybody's welcome.
You do offer something to the listeners of this podcast.
If you use the code IndiePod during checkout, you'll get 25% off your first 3 months of Podtrix.
That's a good deal.
I'm here to support you guys to be creative. You can contact me by sending an email to hello@podtrix.com. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
I encourage everybody to go on to podtrix.com right now and check it out and use the promo code IndiePod to get a little bit of a discount.
You were talking about the podcasting community a while ago. Obviously, we're both involved in that, particularly pretty heavily on Twitter. That's where we met. But I have like more of a underground podcaster sort of thing, right? Like, and that's what works for me. That's like a lot of my audience. A lot of them are new podcasters, James. And we'll call them indie podcasters. I've drove that term to the point where people are cursing at me for saying the word indie so much. But nevertheless, and obviously I heard your conversation with Danny on PodChat. And of course, I fed the indie podcaster question. But there are a lot of different ways to approach like making a podcast. And what I'm really finding out heavily is that there's a complete business approach, right? From like, let's say a pre-existing business. Then there's the just doing it for fun with your friends. And then there's the people that are doing it for fun with their friends kind of, but they think it's going to be a business and they kind of find out. And this is, I deal with all, I daily chat with people asking for advice and stuff. And they kind of find out like, man, this business is not as easy as I was thinking it was going to be because it's a challenge. So you're in a completely different world, but yet we're, I guess I'm saying is we're all the same ultimately. And I thought it was interesting when I had saw that you were talking about the podcast awards that recently happened. And I think it was a tweet or something where you had said, like, I don't think they should be judged any different. Because we are all the same. And I just was curious about how do you, James Cridlin, interact with brand new podcasters? Do you have a positive vibe towards them? Because it can be a very interesting space to be in. A lot of times the people that have been in it for a long time, and I guess you haven't been in it for as long time as a lot of people, they kind of seem unapproachable. That is not you. So how do you interact with brand new podcasters?
I mean, I think one of the things about podcasting that is brilliant about it is that anyone can do a podcast, but more than that, anyone can be on the same platform that all of the big podcasts are on. And so you can, you know, there is nothing stopping you. You can't say that actually about pretty well any other media. You can't say that you can launch a newspaper and be, you know, and get the same distribution as the New York Times. That's impossible. You know, you can't produce all kinds of media things. You know, if you're a book, if you write a book, it's really difficult to get into every single bookshop out there, you know. But if you produce a podcast, then you can be in exactly the same place as This American Life or as Joe Rogan's a bad example, but you know what I mean. You can be in all of those places. And I think that that is really exciting. You know, and there's a job that podcast apps have in terms of surfacing some of the shows that people might want to go and have a listen to. There's also a job in terms of marketing for yourself. But I think that that's the exciting thing about podcasting. And a lot of people jump into it because, well, it's easy, man. You know, it's just like it's like making a video, but without any pictures. And then you realize that actually, no, it's not. And I think a lot of the large podcast companies out there have had lots of money piled into them because podcasting is supposed to be really easy and simple and straightforward. And then they realize that, no, actually, making great audio is really difficult. And making audio that people will come back to every single week, every single month is really hard. And so I think that that's where the disconnect is. I think, you know, from the indie podcaster's point of view, the first podcast conference that I went to in June of 2005 was the first podcast conference, PodCon, I think it was called, in London. Was it PodcastCon? Maybe it was PodcastCon. But anyway, I was standing there as the person from commercial radio, sharing what we were doing, sharing our traffic stats, because I thought that it was a good idea, talking about the idea around seeing if we can help share music and get PodSafe music in, because as a music radio station, that would be a cool thing, wouldn't it? And I remember being really taken aback by just the amount of vitriol and hatred from indie podcasters who were there, who were really annoyed that big commercial radio had, you know, spoilt their space. You know, and people were quite literally shouting at me from the audience, saying, you don't understand this business. You don't understand, you know, what you're in. You know, you've got no place in this. Go away. And I was there thinking, this is a place where we can all coexist. This is a place where the beauty is that the level playing field has never been so level in this space. And it means that everybody can play. And I was really taken aback by the amount of, I understand it, but I was taken aback by the amount of vitriol being given towards somebody who was from the inverted commas established media. And that was quite a, you know, quite a shock to me, I think.
I always say, and this is what's interesting for me about this space, particularly, like you said, the indie podcaster space. I remember getting back into it the day when it really was like sort of like a radio reject feeling, right? But nowadays, there's no need to have this us against the world, you know, sort of vibe. And I actually made the joke a few weeks ago to a friend that this is the only space where I've experienced where people just get pissed off when you're trying to make money or do something. Like the indie podcaster space, people get pissed off if you're trying to do well at something. So I see exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't know whether the indie podcast space gets annoyed when you do well, but I think that there's a certain thing in some parts of the indie podcast world, and particularly in fiction podcasting, which is still its own world, its own clique, that, you know, fiction podcasters talk to themselves and nobody else and get really upset if you say anything. And I think that that's not particularly helpful. And I think at the end of the day, any growth in podcasting benefits us all. And the fact at the moment is that, you know, we're somewhere in the region of 26% of Americans listen to podcasts every month. That's a great number. But we've still got another 74% to go. You know, we can still grow and there's plenty more space for all of us. So I think having a rearguard action of trying to elbow new entrants out of the podcast space isn't particularly helpful. But also conversely, you know, coming back to your point about the ambies and things like that, I think conversely, there's no place for an indie podcast award, because what are you saying there? What's the award for? Is the award for not quite as good as the commercial? Made with slightly less money? The podcast award with the slightly worse microphone? I don't understand what the award is for, other than needlessly trying to, you know, package yourself into a box which has something to do with funding or employment or something else. At the end of the day, great audio is great audio, however that great audio comes. And if there's more great audio in the world, then podcasting succeeds. So I have very little, you know, very little time for people who see, you know, who see that we should be hampering ourselves, giving ourselves labels just so that we can succeed somehow. It's not how listeners work. It's not how any other industry works. And I don't think it's how podcasting should work either.
I knew you were going to say that. That's why I brought it up. I do that every time to you, man. I love to hear that. It gets your blood going a little bit. I like it. I like it.
Did you notice?
Well, obviously I've tried to.
Yeah, but I mean, you clearly, you may have a different point of view.
No, I'm not going to disagree with you, because how do you judge something like that differently? But here's the thing, though. Like, James, tell me, what is the definition of indie? What is the definition of independent? So if somebody could tell me a good definition of that, then maybe I could draw a line in the sand. But I really can't. And that's a good discussion. I love asking people, James, what does indie mean? So that's what I'm going to ask you.
Well, the Podcast Academy has a definition, and the Podcast Academy's definition is, which I think is quite laughable, but anyway, Podcast Academy's definition is, it's a podcast produced by a company with less than 20 employees, which, so far as I'm concerned, makes everything an indie podcast. But anyway, you know, so I think that that's a very, very wide, but, you know, it's a definition. There are some people who say that the definition of an indie podcast is if you have your wages paid by the person who you're making the podcast for. You know, if you do, then it isn't an indie podcast anymore. You know, I really don't know what the definition is. And again, I fail to understand how it's helpful. We understand, you know, I think what an indie podcaster is. It's someone who is coming into this world who doesn't have the backing of a large company and who wants to produce a great piece of audio. Fantastic. I think that's a wonderful thing, but I don't necessarily think that it's something that can be used to divide, because I don't think that that's particularly helpful. I think division in any part of society isn't particularly helpful. And to hide away because I'm an indie podcaster, therefore I'm not talking to you, iHeartRadio, or worse, to hide away, I'm a fiction podcaster, therefore I'm not going to talk to anybody else in podcasting at all, and why won't you listen to my zine? All of that stuff is just deeply unhelpful. And I think we're at a point where podcasting at the moment has so much space to grow. It's such a incredibly powerful thing. And a lot is said about podcasting being intimate and podcasting being, you know, an incredibly intimate medium. But actually, you know, I know from my background working in audio that that is absolutely true. And so I think, you know, we have an incredible thing here that we don't need division and strife and enemies in this industry. And that, I think, has been what's so exciting about it, certainly over the last 10 years or so, is that it has genuinely been people trying to help each other and people trying to grow the medium for the benefit of everybody. You know, a rising tide gathers all boats, as they say. And I think that that's, you know, always a good way to have a think about these things.
I love tweeting that out too, just to get people's reaction. James, I've had hundreds of people literally say to me, if you're not an indie podcaster, if you make money, I'm like, oh my gosh. Well, I guess, you know, I'm not an indie podcaster, and there's a lot of other people that make a little bit of money that rule them out. We're with the big dogs, you know, I'm in the same league.
Yeah.
So no, great definition, yeah. But yet not a definition, because there really isn't one.
Yeah, because there really isn't one. And until A, there really isn't one, and B, there's no real need for one either. You know, I just don't see how it helps anything I don't see how it helps move our industry forward. I know that even people get upset when you use the word industry, our movement forward. You know, I don't think it does. And so therefore, coming back to Pod News, I will cover any news, any stories. And if people say, well, you know, there isn't enough about, you know, such and such part of the industry, the reason for that is that such and such part of the industry isn't producing the news, isn't sending the news to me, isn't making that news available in many of the other, you know, many of the RSS feeds that I read and everything else. You know, that is why if there's, you know, some parts of the industry who feel that they're being ignored, you're being ignored probably because you're not telling anybody about what it is that you're actually doing.
You know, I'm really proud to be an indie podcaster, but I do know one of the things that I have the most difficult time keeping up with is editing this very podcast. It kicks my butt every week, but I will tell you, I did find a solution to this and a team that I can trust to edit my podcast, the team at How's It Podcasting. I met these guys online and I'm not going to lie, I was a little skeptical at first, right? Like, this is my baby. And for me to trust somebody else with it was a really big deal. I did give them a shot and I've just been so satisfied with the results. They understand that you don't have the most amount of money to spend. They have very affordable options to edit your podcast. I do think it'll help you keep your podcast going longer and help you maintain that level of creativity that you're needing, because that needs to be your main focus, is actually creating the content. I want you to reach out to them and give them a shot. How's It Podcasting? So it's H-O-W-Z-I-T Podcasting. On Twitter, you can find them at How's It WP. Same with Instagram, How's It WP. And on Facebook, look up How's It Podcasting. Their email is howsitwp@gmail.com. This will all be in the show notes, no worry. But if you really want to spend that time focusing on the content you're creating and not just spending hours and hours beyond hours editing, I highly encourage you to check out How's It Podcast Editing.
No, I agree. That or you're telling the wrong people, right? I mean, there's a lot of shouting into the void that happens.
Oh, there's a lot of both shouting into the void and there's a lot of echo chamber stuff, you know. And I think one of the things that I'm keen to do is to make sure that great audio, whatever form that takes, is celebrated as much as possible. And we can actually see people having success, you know, in terms of that. And so, you know, always keen to hear from, you know, people who we're not currently hearing from. You know, one of the things that I did, because I suddenly realized that I could do it with some tech that I could write, is that I have a ranker on the Pod News website, which ranks who I've mentioned over the last few months. It ranks the companies that I've mentioned as well. It looks at gender balance, because gender balance is relatively easy. It's not perfect, but it's relatively easy by looking at somebody's name to work out if they're a boy or a girl. So it's measuring that as well. Can't measure, you know, other sort of parts, but at least there's some sort of check and balance there in terms of who am I covering? What companies am I covering? What's the gender balance of the people who I'm covering, and so on and so forth. I think that that's an important thing to end up doing as well. So, you know, so I'm quite serious in wanting to make sure that as many people are covered as possible, and, you know, always very serious in making sure that it's not just from the US, because there are so many incredible podcasting stories that are coming from, you know, places like Africa, India, you know, and lots of parts of Europe as well. And I think it's important to, you know, make those visible as well.
Well, you know, what if I'm going to tell you that my life goal might be to rank on that and that be in those rankings?
Well, it's a relatively easy thing to do, surprisingly.
So I just got to do crazy. I got to be like the Tom Cruise of podcasting and jump on couches and stuff. What do I got to do, James? I'll do it, man.
You've just got to produce news, however you produce news. But yeah, you know, I mean, it's just a case of, yeah, making sure that, I mean, you know, the number one thing to do if you want ever to appear in any news, you know, medium, the number one thing to do is to actually produce some news and tell them about it. Those are the two things. And it's surprising, you know, it's surprising. Firstly, it's surprising now how many people are contacting Pod News with any news that they have, which is great. And that's a wonderful thing. And also, secondly, it's surprising that, you know, you still get people who are, well, you're not covering this part of the industry, or you're not covering me when I did that. Well, did you tell me? Did you tell us? because how am I going to know otherwise? So, you know, so I think that that's an important side of that, you know, as well. But, you know, I'm very keen in covering as much of the industry as I possibly can. And as I say, not that keen in any, you know, trying to break anything or trying to force division into the industry. I don't think that that's particularly helpful.
You had a great, there was a beautiful point about representation, and you do a good job of ranking and judging that. That really is important with the way we do everything. So I did want to give you the nod there for a second. I want to ask you two more things, James. I know you're a busy man. You've got a lot of pod news to go get and make. So what are some things coming up in podcasting that you're excited about? Then on the flip side of that, what are some things currently that you think, I don't want to like be negative and say are a waste of time, but some things that you think we'll see kind of die off in podcasting? That's a good question, ain't it?
Yeah, no, it's certainly interesting. I mean, I think genuinely, I think the amount of new entrants coming into this space is really exciting, because I think that the more talking about podcasting, the more great content which is available through podcasting, that should continue to increase the industry as a whole. And I know that we've had some disappointing figures from the Edison Research Infinite Dial over the last couple of weeks, which has apparently shown podcasting slightly slowing down. I'm not sure necessarily that it's really showing that anyway, but I think anything that can continue to see podcasting rising is an important thing. So that's very exciting. And so things like, you know, YouTube, for example, who seem to be getting very involved in podcasting. I notice that they are a sponsor of the podcast show in London in May. That tells you, I think, a fair amount in terms of where they see their future going. So I think YouTube's, you know, involvement is very exciting. Is it podcasting with a capital P? Does it use RSS feeds? You know, are there enclosures in there? Are they going to be, you know, consuming RSS tags? Who knows? Does that make it any less podcasting? Probably not. I think all of this is very exciting. So I think, you know, you've got that side, you know, is one thing. I also think the amount of different companies coming into this space with new and interesting technology to make life easier is quite interesting too. So if you were to look back a couple of years, Descript, making life easier if you just want to edit interviews, for example, and enabling you to edit interviews just by using a word processor, it does a pretty good job of doing that. And that's certainly helping more people get into the world of podcast audio editing in a way that is much harder if you're just dealing with, you know, Audacity or Hindenburg or whatever it might be. So I think those are useful, but also, you know, tools like Riverside, like Squadcast, tools that do automatic transcriptions for you, tools that will automatically find you new podcast guests or promote your podcast in different ways. There's a new product called Pod Machine, which launched quite recently. And what Pod Machine is it's essentially loads of very good audio editors in the Philippines, as it happens, but they're there editing and polishing people's podcasts. So you give them your raw interview file and they will go ahead and, you know, and tidy it up and smarten it up for you. So all of these tools are basically enabling more people to get into podcasting. And I think that that's a very exciting thing. From a point of view of negative stuff, I think what concerns me a bit is some large companies getting into this space, not really understanding what this space is all about, and particularly trying to be, you know, trying to elbow their way in. Some of what Spotify does is concerning to me, because I don't think it's necessarily particularly helpful to the industry. And, you know, there's a lot of proprietary stuff. You know, Acast doing a great job at the moment of spamming lots of people across podcasting, trying to get you to move to their podcast host.
I've had at least 50 people ask me about those emails, by the way, that they get from them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my point on all of this is, imagine if everybody in the podcast industry did what Acast are doing. It would make it impossible to even exist. You know, we'd be bombarded by these emails. You know, they're relatively unrepentant and they say, well, it's just, you know, it's just marketing and it's part of our marketing plan. But it's a nasty way of marketing. It's a poor way of, you know, annoying people is unlikely to, you know, to really work. So from that point of view, I think that it's a pretty sad thing that they're doing. There are lots of really good people at Acast, and I'm surprised that they're allowing their company to be, you know, brought down in this way. But, you know, so it's companies like that who are sort of, you know, jumping in and not fully understanding, you know, either slagging other people off or not fully understanding how the industry works and how actually if we work on open solutions and we work on bettering the industry in total, then everybody wins out of that.
Well said. Well said for a pod news creator, James Gridlin. Man, I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. I don't want to hold you up all day. I know you're busy. It's been an awesome conversation, man. And I think that, and I will, of course, give you a second to talk about where to find all the great things that you're doing. But I really do highly encourage anybody that's listening to make sure you have signed up for the newsletter, because it's a good, quick read and it's informative, especially if you're interested in, honestly, anything involving podcasting. I think it's a great read.
Oh, well, thank you. That's really kind of you. That's good.
Yeah. Give us the spill, man. Where do we find all this awesome stuff that you're doing? Because you actually have another podcast that you're doing as well, too, I know.
Yeah. So the main Pod News newsletter is at podnews.net, and it also comes out every day on your smart speaker and as a podcast as well, if you want to have a listen to it in that way. I also do a weekly podcast, which is called Podland, which delves a little bit deeper into some of the issues in the podcasting world with a friend of mine, Sam Sethi. Sam and I have been doing this podcast for over a year, and the first time that we actually met physically was a couple of weeks ago at Podcast Movement Evolutions, which was weird. So that was quite fun. So that's all good. You'll find Podland available wherever you get your podcasts, or as I quite often say, in all good podcast players and in Spotify, which I'm sure has made a lot of friends at Spotify. But anyway, so that's a good thing. And if you're interested in some of the other things that I do, then my personal website is at james.cridland.net.
Again, man, I appreciate you taking the time.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you so much for asking me on. I appreciate it.
I'm going to have to just keep asking you every month, maybe just to see how far I can get you to go. So I appreciate it, man.
Who knows?
Thanks for listening, and thanks for telling a friend. But more importantly, thank you for supporting independent content creators. I hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to listen to the upcoming ones. I'm really trying to do something special here by highlighting all the amazing things all these amazing content creators are doing. I hope you continue to join me on my journey. I'm Jeff, aka Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. Keep being you, keep being great.
And the question is, do I stay here? Will you be back? Are you gonna come back? Will you be back? Are you coming back?